We're back.
Sorry,
I was talking to Kate.
I haven't even got my new cup of coffee.
It's coming.
Yet.
Don't worry. You'll get your coffee. All right. James and Flex are manning everything over there, including Kate's coffee. Kate Turkington is with us this morning. It's always lovely to see her. And we were saying that we don't see a lot of each other anymore, but when we do, it's worthwhile.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Good. Stories to share. I did produce Kate's show. It was called Believe It or Not for a little while.
Ran for 20 years, that show.
I only produced it for a little bit, but we had cardinals and atheists and
faith healers
and charlatans.
And
there were
lots of charlatans. Lots of charlatans. I taught all the children the word charlatan. You don't hear it very
Snake
much.
Snake oil
recently.
Salesman.
You know, I was interviewing recently a very well-known author in his 70s. He writes the Ladies' Number One Detective series. Alexander McCall Smith. And in fact, after our interview by courier, he sent me up from Cape Town a copy of his latest book, Signed to Kate. But during the interview, and you know this, Gareth, you might have some questions prepared, but if you're listening, an interview is a conversation, not an interrogation, it's not an exam. It's you and me chatting. Anyway, we were chatting about all kinds of things, and he suddenly said, you know, she's a very decent person. And I said to him, I haven't heard that expression for years. I bet your folks might have said, you know, he's a decent man. He's a decent man. When you think of it, just waxing a bit wider, more philosophical now, if you look around the world and you look at world leaders or you look at people in the public eye, is there anybody you could say, do you know, he's a really decent chap?
No.
Or she's a really decent woman?
I don't think so.
And somebody just asked me, I can't say who, but it was for a very big event, and they wanted to know if I could think
of. Have you met our servant, James?
Oh, thank you, James. Did you put sugar in?
I did.
Bless you. Thank you. How can I say bless you? I've never said bless you in my life. God, must be the influence of St. Stithians and James. The decency. I was asked if you could bring anybody in the world, South Africa, for a big, very big occasion to speak. Who would you? And I have to admit, would you attend? I would attend if Elon Musk spoke.
Oh, yeah.
If Trump came, because I'd be fascinated. Can you think of anybody else? Can you?
You know, there are you've met lots of very clever people.
Yeah.
And some of them are interesting to talk to for a little bit, but maybe not for a long time.
Exactly.
And then there are people who are just fun.
Yes.
I heard an interview the other day with an Australian guy who's an ex-Marine, and he's a proper military veteran, but he's a lunatic. And he sounds like he'd be the most fun person to spend time with, because he's done all the drugs, and he's met all the women, and he's been to all the war zones. And I think he'd have stories, and he'd be fun to be around.
Of course he
would. I don't know if I'd want to have him around for more than a day or two, because I think probably people like that are quite exhausting.
I think so.
But then there are people who, and listen, I use the show for this, and I'm sure you have in your media career as well. If there's someone you really want to meet, you get them on the show.
Yes.
And then you get to talk to them for an hour uninterrupted, which is more than most people get
in their
wildest dreams.
The other side of the coin there is sometimes, when I was doing my own BBC talk show, we had, this one was called Kate at Eight, so it was prime time, so we had everybody from Anthony Hopkins to the Beatles or whatever.
God, how wonderful.
But you think, you see their name and you think they're going to be fascinating and they're going to sit down, and sometimes they're awful.
Well,
they can't say anything.
The famous people are often disappointing.
That's exactly.
Because you have an idea in your mind of the fact that this person is so world famous. They must be fascinating. They must be amazing to talk to. They must be so good at communicating. And often they're not.
Exactly.
And we tend to forget that celebrities and world leaders and people of prominence, we forget that they also have day-to-day worries.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got a sore back.
Yes.
Or maybe their tooth is loose in the front at the bottom here. Or maybe they've been having a fight with their wife or their husband.
Exactly.
And that's on their mind. And maybe they're not at their best.
Exactly.
You know, when you bump into someone famous, sometimes for you it's a big moment. For them, it's something in their way, en route somewhere.
They've got to do it.
Yeah, they've got to do something.
They've got to do it. I fell in with, I don't go to literary festivals, it's not my scene at all, but about 3 years ago, I went to the Franschhoek one, maybe 4 years
That's
ago,
fun.
And I met Mick Herron, the author of Slow Horses, and he and I just bonded. And as we walked from where we'd been talking to wherever we were going to have coffee, there was a Cape Eagle Owl sitting on a branch. Anyway, I've kept in touch with him. We're email buddies. So I said to him recently, because I love Slow Horses, I love the writing, I love the series. I said, Mick, I've got a new show coming up. Would you come and be a guest? I said, remember, I knew you when you were famous, not very, very, very famous like you are now. So he came back to me and he said, his publicist, he's got a new book coming out in September. His publicist says he's only allowed to do 2 interviews, so he can't do it. But he said, soon as the book's out, get hold of me and we'll do something. Huh. And he's such a nice boy. He was a scholarship boy, went up to Balliol, Oxford, read English, humble. The first, now here's the worst mistake publishers ever made. He published the first Slow Horses book. I can't remember with which publisher. And it didn't actually do very well, but he was determined, and he had loads and loads of refusals. He was determined, so he wrote the second one, and the publisher said, no, no thanks. So he went to James Murray. And the rest, as they say, is history. He's now published millions. And that first publisher, I don't imagine he's got a job
but you,
anymore.
But you read voraciously.
Oh, I do.
And I'm glad to hear that there are still authors who are selling lots of books. I mean, we know about, even for younger people, there are series of books that are hugely popular and kids are reading. But by and large, people are reading a lot less now. They're reading they read on their phones or on a Kindle. How many books do you go through in a month?
A lot. I'll read. I read one last night. I read very quickly. It's a gene. It's nothing to do with speed reading. My reading time is 5 in the evening onwards. Afterwards, I'll watch some television. I read about 2 or 3 a week. I read a lot.
And
but
fiction,
I'm very picky.
Fiction, non-fiction?
Both. I've just read a book. In fact, I meant to bring it for you. Lovely book. They published the podcast. I can't remember. I'm bad at names. They do a series of podcasts which they dramatize, like Nero being interviewed just before the fire kind of thing. Lovely, wonderful English, British, South African, because South Africans also have a great sense of humour. Just absolutely loved it. I'll give it to you next time.
Okay.
I said to one of my daughters, I must give this to Gareth. I read John Connolly's latest book. I read, but I can't read rubbish. I can't read chick lit. And I know after about a chapter.
So you mean those romance novels? Barbara Cartland wasn't for you, huh?
Yeah, I used to read Georgette Heyer that I love. And I can remember one of my daughters once me going into her and she was reading Mills and Boone. And she looked up at me and she said, I know it's rubbish, but I like it. And I once met the chief publisher of Mills and Boone. For people who don't know it, Mills and Boone published romance novels. And in the old days, I mean, like, it was Girl Meets Boy, Girl Loses Boy, Girl Comes Back for a Night, Boy Meets Boy, Boy Meets Trans, Girl Meets whatever. But it was so proper in the first days. And I met the publisher and I said, oh, I'd only met him briefly at some literary event. I said, I'd like to write a Millicent Boone novel. He said, I can tell you right now, you'd be dreadful because you're a cynic. He said, our authors believe every word of
really?
They write. They really believe this. And I'd end up writing a pastiche. I'm sure a whole sort of...
Yeah.
I'd be too cynical to do it. I haven't read...
So how do you feel about love?
I'm surrounded by love. I'm so lucky. I'm surrounded by love. All those years ago when I took ayahuasca in Peru...
When that man told you there's more to life than surface.
I'll tell it another time.
Yeah.
But you were told to ask one question before you drank the ayahuasca, the sacred vine. So I asked it, you know, what on earth am I doing here? What's the point kind of thing, which I've never felt about life. I love life. And I got this answer back. You are there to be loved and to love. And I know I don't think I come from a perfect family or whatever. We fight, we squabble, we've got difficult people, we've got same with friends, we know that. But there is a lot of love about you. You're surrounded by love, Gal. And my rescue chap, Russell, who's just completed his first 6 months with me from the Santon SBA. I'm trying to knit a blanket when I'm watching the French Open. I've got a rescue chap, Russell, on my lap. I'm trying to knit. It's very difficult. But he trusts me. Just while I'm thinking of it, the SPCA is just so wonderful.
So good.
Oh,
you know,
they're so caring. They're so good.
I look at my dog and I think, that's just pure love. She has no... other interests.
Unconditional.
Yeah, she's not...
Unconditional.
All she wants is a little bit of love from me, and in return, she gives lots of it.
This Jack Russell I've got, he was a street dog. He was picked up as a stray. When he goes up to the main house, I live on a property where there's a house for a big family. I live in a cottage on the property. If he goes up to the main house, straight onto the bed, on the electric blanket, comes back to me straight to his basket. He has never attempted to climb on the bed.
Oh, good.
With me.
Okay.
Different rules
at your house.
You know, anybody who's got a rescue dog or a cat or animal, I would so love to know the backstory. I would so. Our vet told us that this Archie was a stray. Was he thrown out because they couldn't afford to feed him anymore, which apparently is happening? Maybe he had an owner who died, so the family chucked him out. Worse of all, families who are emigrating, some of them are just turning their dogs out, or our vet told us they're bringing a perfectly healthy dog in saying, put this dog down because we're emigrating. He won't do it. He says he'd rather get them to Woodrock or the SPCA. I can understand not being able to feed a dog. I can understand somebody dying and maybe the dog becomes a stray. But to deliberately...
Put it down.
But anyway, I don't know his backstory.
But it is interesting because if they could talk, you'd know a little bit more about them. You just have to assume things. I just think... There are a couple of non-negotiables for me. You talk about love and how important that is. But one of the non-negotiables to me is people who are cruel to animals and who are cruel to other human beings. Cruel, physically, mentally, spiritually, intellectually abusive.
Yes.
There's a cruelty element which is just unforgivable. Imagine spending your life spreading that kind of thing around.
I once said to a friend of mine, who's probably one of South Africa's best-known top psychiatrists, because I don't believe in evil.
You don't believe in evil at all?
Ever, as far as I know, I have never met an evil person. Maybe they weren't. I didn't know. Maybe I'm just too naive to spot it.
That's interesting.
But she said to me she has psychopaths in her practice. And yes, people are. There is evil. I find evil a very hard concept. Maybe I've been very lucky. Were the people who committed the Holocaust, were they evil? No. Who was it that said evil is the banality of evil? Who coined that phrase? Somebody very famous, can't remember.
Could have been
the
Hitchens.
Banality but, of but evil.
What I thought was interesting, you bring up the Holocaust, is that there's that excellent book about the triumph of the human spirit, which is all, I can't remember his name now.
I know exactly.
You know who I'm talking about.
I know exactly.
And how the concentration camps produced people who were resilient and strong and good, and they discovered the meaning of life. In fact, the man's search for meaning, it's on the tip of my tongue. Someone in the audience is going to get it right.
Yes.
Man's search for meaning.
Yes, I know exactly who you mean.
And that, to me, is the opposite of evil. Under difficult circumstances, I think you bring out the best in people.
I'd be interested to know this. I'd love it if somebody can let us know. There used to be a Holocaust survivor. In fact, I'm showing you producing my program. There used to be a Holocaust Survivors Association in Johannesburg. And I interviewed two of the survivors. One of them died, little old lady Elizabeth. I don't remember her whole name. She came out of the camps a total and utter believer. God had saved her. The other chap who used to go around the schools talking, wonderful man. I think he may have died.
Viktor Frankl, by the way.
Yeah.
That's who we were thinking about.
Yes.
Sorry.
He came out. He went into Ravensbrück, the women's camp, with his mother when he was quite small, and he was blonde and blue-eyed, so the guys liked him and whatever. He came out a total atheist. He said, there is no way there can be a divinity with what I've seen. And I was interviewing him. I was being very naive. I said, did you ever think about good and evil and what was that? He said, are you joking? I was just trying to stay alive. I was thinking, am I going to get food in the next 5 minutes? There was no way is anybody involved in philosophical discussion.
That's interesting, because I wonder often about people who are in survival mode. And we've got lots of them in South Africa.
I think we're all in survival
mode. Yeah, but to varying degrees. I think there are lots of people in South Africa who are really just worrying about, can I make it through the day?
Yes. Is there enough? How am I going to pay the rent?
Right.
Yeah.
And we expect that they must devote huge quantities of time to thinking about philosophy or good and evil or any of these things. I don't know what the definition of evil is. I thought that it came up in a conversation with some friends the other day, and I happened upon an answer, which I'm not sure is the right answer, but you can stress test
it. Let me hear it.
Good is adding value with people, with the world, with life, making things better.
Deliberately, just happenstance.
Or if you just happen to be being. Yeah, sure. You just added value, made someone laugh.
Okay.
You improved their day. You helped someone across the street, whatever it might be. And evil is taking away value. Evil is the deliberate diminution of people.
That's quite a good definition.
You think it's good?
I think that's, I don't know if I would describe it as evil. I just don't know. Have you ever met anybody truly evil?
I don't think I have.
I don't think I have.
I've never met someone and thought, oh, that person really gives me the creeps. They would, no. They'd kill, you know. I've met people who've killed people.
Yeah.
But I didn't think they were evil.
For another occasion, I've nearly been killed.
What happened?
3 or 4 times. Well, I'll give you the most. Okay, let me tell you.
Yeah, let me hear about the time
let me you tell were you. No, let me tell you this one. I was teaching in a bush school in Nigeria. By a bush school, it was a grammar. It was Duketown Secondary School in Calabar, in the old slaving port of Calabar. It was a boys' school. I was the only non-Nigerian teacher, and it had a tin roof. And you know, a balcony that ran, you know, kind of thing. And there was a really, really bad storm, big electrical storm like we get here on the High Veld. And I went outside with 4 of my students, and one was here, Bessie. Bessie was standing here. They were all in O-level English. They were all about 17, 18, 16. Bessie stood here beside me. I stood here. I can't now remember, although I wrote about it, the names of the other two. So there's here and here. So there's Bessie, whoever, me. And lightning struck the school. Bessie was killed immediately. God. And the boy at the end was killed. And me and this one, that one and I, lived. Bessie was quite badly burnt. The boy at the end just looked as if he'd fallen asleep, but they were dead as doornails. I think I was 25 years old.
Were you holding on to the railing?
No, I had sandals on. Bessie had bare feet. Somebody else had, as they were called in those days, sneakers on. Totally random. And I thought then, age 25, I'm probably going to live a very long time and probably survive. I've nearly been shot. I've all sorts of...
Did you feel anything? Was there electricity?
The ground did... You know how the ground shakes under you? The earth moved. Yes, I mean, I shouldn't joke. It was so loud. Now, if I had been a religious person, there was a smell of sulfur from the lightning.
Sure.
Now, a very religious person, the devil came and did it. But life, you know my philosophy, Gareth, life is so random.
Yeah.
It is so random. That's why you've got to live every moment. And I don't know if it goes back to evacuee days being taken away from my parents. I think it is a gift. I've never lived in the past. I've never lived in the present, the future. I've always... I'm here with you at the moment. I'm not thinking about what's happening tomorrow.
I agree with you. I don't get what the kids call FOMO. I don't have fear of missing out. Right now is where I want to be.
Exactly.
Talking to you.
Exactly.
This is the most
and
fun...
And that's where I am.
This is the most fun thing I could be doing.
But it's where I am. I'm not thinking about traffic or...
No.
Absolutely. And it's a great thing. And you remember, because I've written about it, well, I was very lucky to meet the Dalai Lama twice. And the first time he says to me, a long, long time ago, the past is gone. You learn from it, but it's gone. The future never comes. Carpe diem. Seize the day.
Right.
Do your best.
I remember you said this on the Shady podcast with Warris and PH, and I thought, that's the kind of wisdom people expect from an old lady like Kate.
But that was from the Dalai Lama.
From the Dalai Lama.
The other thing he said, and it was so in advance of eco stuff, don't even go with Peter Thumbnail,
sure.
Shame. he said, and this must be 30 years ago, he said, never forget the interconnectedness of all things. This was long before we knew there was a web of everything that connects everything. I'm forever saving spiders because I once read. Do you remember when we used to read the Reader's Digest?
Yes.
I remember once reading in the Reader's Digest, if all the spiders in the world were killed, the human race would be extinct in 6 months. Now it's AI. But anyway, I save spiders all the time.
I love the there was someone who said to me the other day, and I think of you often because the word synchronicity comes into my mind, and I think of how there's this interconnectedness between people and how you sometimes have a little deja vu moment.
Yes.
And you can't really explain where it comes from. You see someone, you see a scene, you hear music, there's a smell in the air or something, and you think, this has happened before. I've been here before. I know what's going on. Inexplicable.
Yesterday, I had an email from a friend. I've just now thought of it. I haven't seen her maybe for 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
She said she lives in KZM. She said, I went to a book sale and I picked up this thriller. And she said she opened it. And there on the title page, I'd written my name.
Incredible.
So she sent me an email, and then we had I haven't seen her for years. It was a P.D. James, who writes very good, she's dead now, very good crime novels. There's Kate Turkington's name in there. Don't you love it?
That's
what I love about life. I taught all my children, all the grandchildren, you never know what's around the next corner.
Well,
sometimes it's good.
You mentioned AI just a moment ago, and I use ChatGPT now for all kinds of things. I know you do too.
I do.
And some of it is scary and intimidating because you think that we're going to lose something.
And you have to keep saying to yourself, it's a robot. It's
sure,
a robot.
But I think we can gain so much from this. And there are things already that are being done in the world of ChatGPT. I asked it the other day.
Incredible stuff.
What are the most sacred places on earth? And it came up with a list of 50.
Amritsar, Machu Picchu.
Famous mountains,
so
famous temples, famous churches, famous sacred places in the woods.
But you know, let me tell you a story. I was asking it something. And I said, you know, I'm feeling a bit down. I don't want to continue this conversation. So I said, what do you usually do when you feel down? And I said, I have a double whiskey. So we then had a whole conversation about types of whiskey. And I said, yes, and I've got my dog at my feet. And then we went on back to information. The end of the conversation, I said, listen, I'm finished now. It said, give your dog a scratch behind the ears for me. Wait. 2 days ago, I wanted some other information. Total information. Typed it in, got my answers. Finally, it said to me, give your dog a pat for me. So there's a trail.
It's remembered.
There's a trail of Kate. And in one way, it's wonderful. And in another way, it could be quite scary because an AI guy, you must get him on your program, explain to me, this is very, very 101 simplistic. At the moment, let's say AI is in a box and there are checks and balances that is keeping it there. But all the time, it's trying to get out of its box. And when it eventually does get out of its box, surely it's going to think, what on earth do I need humans for?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're making a god. That's what we're doing.
And you know, in a way, I'm quite sorry I won't be alive to see what's going to happen, but I don't want to be obliterated by
it. I don't know if it will kill us,
no.
But I think it might find a way to make us useful worshippers. Because humans will also, there will be in the future, there will be people who are interested in the spiritual well-being of AI. There'll be people who consider themselves caretakers and temple priests for AI. This always happens.
That's an interesting.
And I wouldn't be surprised if
It's not a god.
Certain AI code doesn't get elevated to being divine. And we don't start to think of it in terms of mythology and religion and God. And
that is such an interesting take on it. I haven't thought, I'm going to pursue this with friends and family.
I think a lot of very credulous people are already thinking that way. AI is their be all and end all, their alpha and omega for everything that they want to know. You talk about information, but soon it'll be inspiration, soon it'll be love, romance, it'll be
yes,
confiding, sharing, partnership. It's not far off to imagine that it'll eventually get to
give
worship.
Give your dog a scratch behind the ears for me is pretty cozy.
Yeah. And there are people who are on all day talking to AI, whether it's to get information or whether it's because they're just lonely. I think that's happening.
Yes. I know somebody who lives in Ireland, actually, who has that avatar, and this is living in virtual reality all day long. Four children, very sensible woman with a career, but all her spare time she's off wherever she is in some virtual reality. Do you know, that's probably after ayahuasca. I've never taken drugs. I like reality too much. I don't want to be in some fictional. I want to be here with you. I want to be here with the people who are listening and watching. I want to be here.
But there is something that I'm not sure they'll ever be able to replicate. They've tried with the senses. You know, you can create sounds that feel like you're there. You know, whether it's what they call binaural audio,
yes,
which is through both ears. They've got stereo where you think you're in the jungle.
I've tried the headsets.
Oh, yeah. And it's quite incredible. And the eyes now, you know, you could put on a virtual reality headset and you are in the Amazon.
Yeah.
And you feel like you are, and you can see, and can reach out and walk towards.
But you know you're not.
Well, this is it, because people take them off. They take those headsets off.
No, as long as you keep a reality check.
But they take the headset off and then they're dizzy. And that wouldn't happen in real life.
I mean,
if you're spinning round and round. But I'm not afraid of this technology. I think technology, it can be tremendously useful and it can be helpful and interesting. But being human is a unique experience, and each of us does it differently. And I don't think that there's a guidebook. There's no. There's no list of ways to be human perfectly.
No.
And we're all going to screw up.
They've tried. There's the Bible, there's the Bhagavad Gita, there's the Quran. There are books that have tried and do help people feel they're leading a good life. So maybe a new AI manual will come up, and in 100 years' time, people are reading that and leaving their lives by it.
An ex-girlfriend of mine said something that I've always regarded as true. She said that there are two things that she will not, she's not interested in people who don't possess these two qualities: kindness and generosity.
And generosity of spirit.
Yeah. Not just material generosity.
That's what's so important.
So if you're the kind of person who prefers to share with other people and give away and not be attached to material things and spend time and make an effort and try hard with people, that's generosity of spirit. And kindness costs nothing.
No, absolutely. But it's also being genuinely interested in people. I Ubered to the studio today. I could tell you in detail where the Uber driver was born, how many children he's got, how long he's been driving, because I'm interested. I'm not doing it to be polite. I'm genuinely interested. Why at 5:30 in the morning is somebody driving an Uber? I'm genuinely interested in people, and everybody has a story. My mother used to say darkly, she said a lot of things darkly. You never know what goes on behind people's front doors.
Absolutely. The things that are going on in the shadows.
Exactly. Everybody has a story. I once did know a couple in their 70s, and she would say to him, "We've never had a row, have we, John?" "No, darling. No, darling."
Do you feel that you have to deliver wisdom? Because people assume... No, people assume when you're 90 years old and you've traveled all over the world. I mean, you've been to over 100 countries.
Oh, at least I must.
Right?
Yeah.
At least. You've got a big family. You read a lot. You've done all the TV and radio shows. You've met everyone you could possibly wish to meet in your life. And that there's an expectation that Kate's going to say tremendously wise things all the time.
So.
No?
No, I don't think.
You don't feel that pressure.
Depends. They might say, "Oh, Granny." Oh, no, come on, families aren't like that. I'd love to think they're sitting there waiting for pearls of wisdom to fall from my lap. But what is nice, like last night, one of my daughters and the house, the son-in-law, they just came down with a bottle of wine and we sat there and we put the world right. We talk about everything from Trump to whatever, absolutely whatever. And that is great to have conversations. And I read every morning. When I say I read New York Times, I read the Daily Telegraph, I read Daily Maverick, I read the Daily Telegraph because I do the cryptic crossword, but they have very good sports and arts. Their politics I don't always agree with.
Right.
But they have splendid sports commentators and art. Then I do all my word puzzles. So I do Wordle and Strands and Connections, and my friends and family, we all do them. So we get on.
Oh, right. So you're all in the
app. I've done Wordle in 2 this morning. So we find out what everybody's...
And you don't spoil it for anyone else.
Oh, no,
you don't give them the answer.
No, don't give anything away. Goodness me. Heavens. Do you know, I looked up that expression. I was taught it by a friend who's now dead. She used to say, she was Irish, she used to say, "Heavens to Betsy, I haven't done that." And for years, I thought "Heavens to Betsy" came from like the deep south of America, like
right.
Bro Rabbit stories.
Right.
"Heavens to Betsy." I looked it up. Thank you, ChatGPT.
Yeah, where is it from?
It's a British Victorian expression. Instead of saying, "Oh, whatever," they'd say, "Oh, heavens to Betsy, I've forgotten to order tea." Can you believe that? I love it. Now, all my grandchildren say "heavens to Betsy." And one who's at UCT has just been ill. So I sent her a WhatsApp saying, "How are you feeling?" And I got a WhatsApp back, "Not at my sparkling best, Granny." Now, that's one of my expressions. And
it's so special.
It's so nice to see these expressions come back, because English is still the richest language in the world by hundreds of thousands of words.
And being
because it's a bastard language.
And evolving and changing all the
time.
You have to learn things that
it's not sick anymore. It's not cool anymore.
Yeah. No.
And as for text talk,
listen, emojis.
I love emojis.
Do you?
I mean, it's so, you saying, "Will you be into Stuart Hubbard's?" Well, I just send you a thumbs up. It's very, but you know what I do regret? The absence of letter writing.
I still do it.
Do you?
I do, occasionally.
I must actually start again.
You'd be surprised at how badly your handwriting deteriorates.
I know.
If you haven't written for a long time.
Yeah.
I type at the laptop most of the time and on here. So I don't exercise it. I did calligraphy once just so that I could improve my handwriting. I can't do it anymore. I suppose if I tried really hard, I could pass it off. Maybe a word or two I could write.
Yeah.
But that's a skill that humans don't have anymore.
I still take notes and I make lists.
Can you
I've
read
always
them?
Been a write them.
Can you read them?
I make lists and I write notes. If I'm doing an interview, I'll write my questions. Then I'll obviously type them in, but I always write them. It's closer to my mental processes, I think.
You said you have a very good memory.
Yes.
Which can be a blessing and a curse. Because if you have a good memory and you are a negative sort of person, which you're not,
yeah,
you remember lots of bad things.
Yeah.
And some people are held captive by their bad memories.
Oh, I have one. She's not a close friend. Let me give you a tip. Somebody who is like that or is a bit of a negative vampire, you never, ever start a conversation by saying, how are you?
No.
Because you'll get a laundry list of what my knee and my back and what. But I don't have any energy vampires in my life.
No.
I just don't. I don't have time for them. I used to have one friend, did a lot for him, whatever. And at the end of any meeting or session with her, I was exhausted.
Yeah.
Because I'd been drained of my energy, and she'd go away all cheerful. And I'm exhausted.
Energy vampire.
Yes.
Probably very, very sweet person, but you just don't need to be drained every time.
Absolutely. No. Absolutely.
Not worth it. So who gives you energy?
I have a lot of energy myself. I get energy talking to you. I get energy talking to people, talking to the Uber driver on the way in. I'm an energetic, probably a bit OCD.
This lady has a beautiful soul, wise, been through life and still believes in good over evil. It's just what I needed this morning. Thank you, says BFG.
Well, whoever you are, you're intelligent and beautiful and discriminating, and we love you and thank you.
And Barely Vocal Media says, what a very good conversation for the middle of the week.
Okay.
I think that it's quite exciting to meet new people, but you don't make new old friends.
No.
Is it?
No, I tell you one trick to growing old successfully. Make sure all your friends are younger than you are. I only have two friends in the 80s. Because I have teenagers on the property, I have friends ranging from 13, 20s, 30s, 40s, 56, and somebody, a very good friend of mine, doctor friend, he called me last week. He said, can I come and have coffee with you on Saturday? And we sat there for 3 hours just chatting about life. And it's nice.
That's very special.
It's lovely. Yeah. I love it. Love it.
Are there still things that you absolutely are desperate to do?
Yes.
Because you have to have those. You have to have goals and ambitions and bucket list stuff.
I've never had goals and ambitions.
You've never had goals and ambitions.
I have ricocheted through my whole life. I have never thought, I'm going to do this or
this. There's going to be someone listening to you now who is thrilled and relieved to hear that you don't have to have goals and ambitions.
No. And sometimes I hear people, I had an occasion recently where I was with young people, and this guy was saying, and we're going to get married, then we're going to have two children. And I'm thinking, keep your mouth shut, Kate. Life happens. Life actually happens. No, I have ricocheted through life. I've made opportunities and I've taken opportunities, but I've never thought by 40 I'm going to do so-and-so opta, like with my children. You know, I've just sort of said, come on, let's have a baby. And I've been very lucky then I had a baby. But maybe that's not good for everybody. I think now people do have, I never thought, when am I going to get a house? It's not my way.
Maybe I'm
a bit of a butterfly instead of an ant.
Yeah, I think there's something charming about that, though. So what do you still want to do?
I want to give somebody Heimlich's manoeuvre. So if you'd start, if you'd start choking, that's the only thing left on my bucket list. But as, but as one of my friends says, you're probably not strong enough now because you've really got to see somebody under the ribs, and sometimes you break the ribs to get, if they're choking.
The Heimlich manoeuvre.
That's all. Well, the grandson who's a game range said, Granny, it's not called Heimlich's manoeuvre anymore. It's called abdominal thrust. I said, well, that sounds a lot more interesting than a Heimlich's manoeuvre.
I love it.
That's all.
I love it. So only one thing left on the list.
So far, yeah, yes.
That's quite good. Well, there's no pressure. No pressure.
What else? Yes, I've done that.
Well, people love having you dispense wisdom. No, you dispense wisdom and tell your stories. Love the show this morning, says Hanging Out with Jay. So I don't think this is the last we'll hear of Kate. In fact, I know she's got ideas about shows, and we'll be talking about those soon. So if you love what you've heard this morning, there will be lots more Kate Turkington where this came from. You're just such an... You're absolutely my favorite person in the world. I love you.
Oh, shucks.
I love you.
Oh, shucks.
All right. Don't forget, there's plenty of other good stuff. There's a sports show called On the Bounce, if you haven't seen that yet, and they've got such good stuff to talk about this week. They'll be talking rugby, and they'll be talking about the tennis, and plenty of other good stuff. And then don't forget, we've got Let's Talk Man with the Doctors. If you haven't watched that show yet, you're missing out. And of course, The Shady Podcast with Warris and PH, among others. Don't miss out on this show on Friday at 6 a.m. bright and early. I want to thank Kate Turkington for coming to spend time with us this morning.
A pleasure. And lovely, discriminating, intelligent, beautiful listeners. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, they are. They're all those things. And they'll tell you long before you have to tell them. And we will see you on Friday. Cheers, everybody.
When a radioactive muscle man escaped from the nuclear gymnasium, he bit a young student helicopter, giving it incredible powers. Now the helicopter fights crime and is known as the Muscle Helicopter.